Hey guys, I'm Esther, owner of Sarath Design.
And I'm Jen, owner of Hella June Creative. Welcome to Better, the Brand Designer Podcast.
We're all about broadcasting conversations that support our design community, uncovering industry secrets, and offering actionable advice.
Just remember, the only designer you need to be better than
is the one you were yesterday.
Hey everybody, happy Tuesday. Welcome back to Better the Brand Designer Podcast. I am sitting here with my friend and brand new employee, Lauren, just from a couple episodes ago. Hello, welcome back.
Hey, yeah, it's good to be back so soon.
I know. It's just nice to like kind of bounce some ideas off of another person in the inbox questions episode. So I was like, Lauren, would you like want to record this with me? And she was like, heck yeah. So I feel like it's nice too to just get different people's perspectives, because I'm sure like our answers probably like won't be the same on different questions. And it's important for, you know, anyone listening to know that there really is no one like wrong or right way to answer a lot of these questions. Sometimes it's just really interesting to see how like, oh, like I wonder what Jen thinks about this, or I wonder how Lauren would approach that situation. So that's kind of the outline for today's episode. I literally love recording these, and I think they're some of our most listened to episodes because they're a great place for people to start if they're like curious about like what the podcast is all about and stuff like that. So welcome to your first inbox questions episode.
Yay. Yeah, I'm so excited about some of these questions. They're really good.
Yeah. Lauren pulled a couple. I pulled a couple. These are all questions that are asked directly from you guys. When we have new people join our free Facebook group, plug facebook.com/groups/betterbranddesigner. We always ask you guys, like, what question do you have for us? We might answer your question on air. And so if any of you guys have asked these questions, thank you so much for submitting them. A lot of these were so, so good. Lauren and I were joking before we started the recording about a couple questions that were super, super general about like, how do I scale my business to become an agency? And it's like, I wish we had the time to really dive into those types of questions. But these questions that we're going to answer today are going to be a little bit, some of them will be more broad, but some of them will be more focused. It'll be a good mix all around.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, let's do our roses and thorns and then dive right in to the questions. Do you want to go first?
Yeah, sure. Okay, so my rose is that next week I'm going on a little vacation. I'm going to do like a family vacation. I feel like my family isn't really the family vacation type, and it's probably because they live kind of all over the place. Like my dad's side of the family, half of us live in Wisconsin, the other half live in Virginia. So we're all going to Virginia next week and spending some time. It's going to be like a water sports week. We're going to do some kayaking, boating, swimming in the pool. So I'm just like super, super excited to relax and take some time off work. What's your rose for the week?
My rose for the week is that I got a new pair of flip-flops.
Nice.
I got some rainbows. If anyone is familiar with the Rainbows brand, like I think they're the best flip-flops and they last for years and years and years. And I had a pair in high school that lasted for like 10 years and then they just got really gross and I threw them away. But I haven't had them for a while and I realized that the only shoes that I have are like nice like leather sandals, and I like don't really want to wear those to like the beach where they get all sandy and like gross. So just, you know, made the plunge, and they're a little bit more pricey than just your typical like $30 sandals, but totally worth it. And I don't know, very excited. I'm now realizing as I say this that one of my previous roses in a previous episode was that I got a new pair of sneakers. So obviously I'm very passionate about footwear.
Yeah.
And sorry that that was so boring.
Also, like, I need to look up rainbow sandals. I don't think I've heard of this brand. It sounds kind of familiar, but I feel like every pair of sandals that I buy breaks. So
yeah, I think really I need to invest. Like, leather, and they like form to like the bottom of your feet too. Mm-hmm. So like they just, I think the ones that I got were like 80. So like, okay, definitely pricey for like flip-flops, for like, yeah, casual flip-flops. But like, I know they're going to last me for the next like 5-10 years. So totally worth it. I mean, it's a Florida thing too. We just wear flip-flops everywhere.
Yeah, so. You need flip-flops. That's like what you survive in.
Absolutely. So what's your thorn?
My thorn is that I kind of overbooked myself. So I scheduled this client project before I scheduled my vacation. So I ended up having the two overlapping. And so now I feel like my client project is kind of at like a really intense point. And so I'm trying to like work through it quickly so that when I get back from vacation, I'm not like just trying to rush through the end of it. Just trying to get my schedule all figured out and just feeling like I have a lot on my plate, but it's, you know, it's all good. It's just because of a vacation, which is exciting. So yeah, that's kind of what my thorn is feeling like this week.
Yeah, I feel that. I feel like my thorn is similar, that like I just have so many little tasks that I feel like are on my to-do list, and I just do not get to the end of them every day. And I feel like I'm constantly pushing tasks forward that are like more low priority. And so like, I feel like I'm working on not only expanding my project cadence now that I have you on the team, and I'm discovering what my capacity looks like now with our current team structure, also planning for the future and thinking about like, how do I want to best utilize my time in my business? So I guess my thorn would be that like my to-do list is never ending, but that's just kind of like a reality of like owning a business. So it's a thorn that I feel like might be really relatable to everybody. But I wanted to give a shout out to a book that I'm currently reading. It's called Buy Back Your Time. And I'm going to include a link to that on Amazon in the show notes. I am really, really enjoying that book because it's like reminding me what tasks I have to do myself versus what tasks I can realistically outsource. And I realize that I'm like holding on to a lot of things that I could outsource. And so, I mean, Lauren, you and I will have a conversation about this in the future, but like emails, like I spend a lot of time responding to emails, and I feel like you know my business so well at this point that a lot of that I could just be like, hey, please respond to this email, and you would be able to respond to it and understand where to find, like it's usually people looking for files or something. It's like Lauren can handle that. Creating site maps, I'll make you a Loom video. This is how I create a site. Usually the page list is already in the proposal. You just got to put it into the little template and like make a little outline for the pages. Like, I feel like you could do that. You know, like there's just so much more even on the website. Like, why am I doing all these little nitty gritty, like show it things when I know Lauren is equally talented and equally efficient at designing and show it. And it's not something that I like love as much. And so I'm like, okay, what could I be doing with my time? Like outside of that, I don't know. That's like a whole other podcast episode. I want to be like a guest on more podcasts. I want to network more. Like, there's just a lot of thoughts that are swirling around in my brain. But it's all good. It's like it's a thorn, but it's like a positive thorn. It's like a positive challenge that I get to work through.
Yeah, that actually reminds me of an Instagram post that Becca from Sky High Interactive posted on her Instagram this week. And it's about the best advice that she's ever received from her business coach. And the piece of advice was that you make a two-column list, and on the left side, you write out the things that you spend too much time on, and then on the right side, you write out like some solutions for how you could either outsource those problems or just find ways to streamline and make your life a little bit easier. So yeah, I thought that just kind of reminded me of what you were just saying.
Yeah, 100%. Love Becca and the team. If you guys are not following Sky High Interactive, they do incredible work. They work with like powerhouse women and men in business. And Becca's design style is like unmatched. I used to white label for her. Lauren currently white labels for them. And I just really look up to Becca as a creative director. And we like both have so much respect for her and her team. So go give them a follow. Shout out. Okay, should we dive into our questions?
Yeah, I can go ahead and read the first question, okay. Which is, how did you find your personal style or niche? And this question was asked by Christy Boyd. So for me, I think it takes time with anyone, like how to find your niche. And I also don't think that you have to niche by style. I know plenty of designers that have like, their style is all over the place, and it really depends on the client specifically. And then I also know designers that all of their projects have the same kind of vibe and the same style and the same kind of colors. So it's honestly up to you if like one of those resonates with you, if you really love certain styles, or if you would rather just kind of work with a variety of clients that have a variety of style needs. I'm like kind of somewhere in the middle where I think that I do a lot of more like modern kind of fresh typographic work. It's colorful. It's simple. But at the same time, like some of my clients have very like sophisticated, elegant, mature like styles, and some are really playful and very trendy. So I kind of find ways to have a consistent style across the board. But definitely like a lot of my clients are very different in terms of style. But for my niche, I think I had a whole episode about this on my podcast, which is Branding Bestie. But I've changed up my niche a lot over time, and now I've kind of landed in a place that's more broad. I used to really focus on product-based businesses, and I think I focused so much on them that I felt like I started to miss out on some potential clients in the service-based industry that I was really like interested in. So now I'm kind of somewhere in the middle again where I don't have like a super specific niche, but I think the fact that I do a lot of packaging design makes me lean towards product-based businesses more often. So yeah, that's me. What about you?
Got it. Yeah. I mean, everything you said is the exact, like, I completely agree with. I think it's completely different for everyone. I don't think you need to find a personal style or niche. For me personally, the way that I developed my design style was that I just started by getting inspiration from other people and noticing like what I was drawn to, and then kind of crafting my positioning around what clients started to ask me for. People were asking me for this like laid back luxury style, modern meets classic, like, you know, clean, minimalistic, but colorful. And so I kind of paid attention not only to what I liked, but also to what my clients were coming to me for. That's how I ultimately crafted all of my positioning statements, my taglines, all the words and phrases that you guys see in my website copy has all been like asked of me by potential clients because they've seen my work. So it's kind of like chicken or the egg. You kind of have to like go at it from both directions. Like, yes, it should be about what you like, but it should also be about what clients ask of you. So I think that's probably the best tip that I have for developing positioning in general, whether that's your industry niche or your style.
Yeah, your copy is amazing. I always like go to your website for copy inspiration. I just love how simple it is. Like, I feel like people really overdo it with copy. So yeah. I love just like scaled back, really simple, but really effective messaging like that.
Thanks. Yeah. One of the things that I've been saying to clients on sales calls to tell them more about my copy philosophy is that a really good headline is worth 1,000 words. And so yeah. I don't even put paragraphs under headlines anymore. A headline and a CTA, that's all you need, I feel like, for a really minimalistic website section. Maybe in the about section, you can do paragraphs and stuff like that. But I don't know. I just, people aren't going to read beyond the headline most of the time. I don't.
Yeah, so. Totally agree.
Maggie Glissman asks, I am interested in creating a better client experience and making a smooth onboarding process. Are there any tools or tips that you would recommend? Maggie, you and I are the same. I feel like I'm always trying to make my onboarding process more smooth. Lauren is always coming up with new ideas for the Hello June onboarding process. The tried and true favorites that you guys all know about, HoneyBook and Notion, I feel like they go hand in hand. The moment that Notion releases payment processing, contracts, invoicing, I'm not going to need HoneyBook anymore because Notion is just like the best piece of software that like I've ever used in my company. And I'm obsessed with it. I started using it more for personal stuff too. Another tip that I would say beyond just like choosing the right software that works well for your company is to create a standard SOP or standard operating procedure. I guess it's redundant to say standard SOP. I should just say SOP. So create an SOP library / checklist and follow the same steps every time. If you don't have a Lauren in your life that helps you with your onboarding, and I didn't for a long time, I feel like with onboarding, it's a lot of really tiny steps that all go together, and it's easy to overlook a step here or there. And so I had to follow a specific list that I had created for myself, a little checklist of like what needed to happen, like put together the questionnaire, send the client the welcome email, create the client portal, populate the timeline, make sure that they have all the assets that they need, make sure that they're aware of all the due dates. And then I also go over this with them on the call. I say, hey, did you get a chance to peek at the client portal? And then most of the time they're like, yeah, I took a look. And I go through like line by line, everything in that portal that's going to be like, that's going to help the client help me make the process really smooth. So I feel like those two things, having a good, strong client portal, making sure that you have a detailed timeline. I started putting those in my proposals now and making sure that the client is aware of them on the client portal, and then making sure to go over the client portal with them on the call.
Yeah, I completely agree. I am also a Notion junkie, love Notion, obsessed. Like, it just is a life changer. So if you haven't used it yet, I would definitely dive in and take a look and see. There's a lot of like Notion templates out there too that you can purchase. So would recommend. But also talking about HoneyBook a little bit more, something that Jen and I both have kind of switched up fairly recently with HoneyBook is combining the proposal with the contract and the invoice all at once. So when you have a discovery call and the client seems, you know, interested enough to move forward that you're sending a proposal, we're just creating the proposal directly in HoneyBook. You know, you can create like really great templates. And now that they have those smart files in HoneyBook, you can create proposals that actually look nice too, which is awesome. You know, the proposal can have information like testimonials, past work, and then it has a list of all the service options. And then they can just basically select whatever service option they're interested in and then go ahead and just click on to the next page, sign the contract right there, and then pay the deposit all at once. So like, we used to send proposals through Notion, which it's kind of nice to do in Notion because you can really, really customize it, but then you would have to wait for the approval, then send the contract, then send the invoice, and it just adds more steps. And also just, I don't know, there's always room for error, or there's room for something to be forgotten when there's lots of like individual steps and you're having to constantly check in with clients. So I think it's nice to just have them be able to do everything all at once, and then you're just good to go and you can start the project. So yeah, HoneyBook is amazing. I love it so much.
I always like to say, make it easy for people to pay you.
Yes.
Like, as easy as possible. And yeah, multiple steps just allows for emails to get lost. And yeah, love HoneyBook. I even had a client the other day. She's actually still deciding between me and another designer, but she said, thank you. Wow. Thank you so much for this beautifully designed proposal. And I was like, HoneyBook for the win.
Yeah.
I bet the other designer's proposal didn't look as good as mine. No, she probably sees a HoneyBook too.
HoneyBook should be used by everybody, honestly. Yeah. Okay, so the next question comes from Sacred T, which is, what was the beginning of your business like? I only hear stories about businesses after they've become successful, never in the beginning of their career and how tough it's been and all of the struggles that come with starting your business. Yeah, that's a great question. And I agree. It's always kind of like hard listening to really successful designers or agency owners that are like, yeah, I'm making like multi six figure months. And you're like, okay, well, like what did you do when you first started and you were really struggling? So my business, I kind of started, I'll be on a whim. Like, it's something that I wanted to do for a while, but I was in like a toxic agency environment, and I just kind of got to the point where I needed to get out ASAP. So I basically went into my business without any clients, without knowing what I was doing at all. Like, I didn't have business knowledge. I didn't really know what I was doing. And luckily, taking online courses helped me so much at the beginning. Like, I know this course doesn't exist anymore, but maybe there's something similar out there. Clover and Crow used to have a course called the Freelancers Business Bootcamp. And basically, she would walk you through like how to present work to clients and like what should be in a contract and how to send an invoice. And like learning all of that at the beginning made me feel so much more confident taking on projects. And then I also took Branding with Brie, which I know is closing really soon.
I know, so if you guys, I saw that.
It's so sad because it's so good, but I'm sure she's going to make, I know, she's probably going to make something equally as amazing in the future. But yeah. I know like Foxtrot does something similar where it's like a branding course. So there's definitely courses out there for branding, but like I think just doing as much continued education as you can will help you see the behind the scenes of other businesses. And then that will just make you feel confident about what you're doing, because I feel like doing trial and error, it's going to take you so long to get to a point where you're feeling good about your process. But if you just kind of steal someone else's process and their, you know, like what, how they handle client work and how they present their work and all that good stuff, it's going to just accelerate your success. So it was tough at the beginning, but I think online education helped me so much.
Yeah, I agree. I think the hardest thing for me at the beginning of my career was just not knowing whether or not like the business was going to ever like become something that I would continue doing. I think it's just that like not knowing like that is just hard mentally to deal with. Obviously, once your business becomes successful over an extended period of time, you can kind of sit back and take a breath and be like, okay, now I can fine tune and I don't have to worry about this like do or die, like, am I going to be able to pay my bills like type of situation, which is a big reality when you do start your entrepreneurial journey. I think the other like hardest part of starting was like this like oscillation between big wins and just really like low valleys. And I think as time has gone by, I feel like probably in both of our businesses, we've learned to weather the storms a little bit better and understand that everything is cyclical and like there are going to be seasons of plenty and there are always going to be season like slow seasons. But in the beginning, it can feel so hard to not attribute those slow seasons to something that you're doing wrong. Like as a founder, like I would always turn inward and be like, oh, well, inquiries are low. Like I must be wrong. I must be bad. I must not be a good enough designer that people like don't want to work with me. Or I'd get pricing pushback and be like, oh, who am I to ask for 5K or 10K or 15K? Like what, who do I think I am? You know? And I feel like now over time, like that confidence has just grown at over, like as I've converted clients at those price points and beyond. So like, I feel like it's just a lot of uncertainty. Sigrid, I would recommend listening to a podcast episode that Esther and I recorded last season called Advice to Our Younger Selves. And that is all us talking about our like beginning years in business. We actually wrote real letters to ourselves and we read them like on the air and reacted to each other's letters. I feel like that might give you a good window into just like emotionally, like what it was like for us in those beginning stages, really pull back the curtain there. And you're right. It's not something that's talked about often enough. So I hope that that short answer was helpful.
Yeah. Yeah. That episode was super insightful and also like really emotional too. So yeah. I think that's a really,
I think I cried. Really, if you guys want to hear me cry on the podcast, then that's a good one to listen to. We'll link it's that one in the show notes.
Yeah. Also like, something else that reminded me of what you were saying with like weathering the storm and, accepting like the slow seasons and the busy seasons. Something that helped me at the beginning was having like a part-time job. I don't think you need to dive headfirst into like full-time entrepreneurship, especially if you're used to working a 9-to-5 and having like benefits and, paid time off and stuff, it's going to be kind of jarring to go from that to not having, you know, any stability whatsoever. So I was a dog walker at the start of my business, and that was a great way for me to get outside and like get some exercise, but also just like make some money. So I didn't feel like this super heavy weight over my shoulders of like, if I don't get a client, I'm going to not be able to pay my rent. So I would recommend, like, you could even do white label work for another designer, or like, you know, production design, contract work. There's lots of ways that you can make money that don't require you to be constantly getting clients.
Yeah, 100%. How do I help small startup clients who can't afford a multi-$1,000 branding package? This is from Caitlin Johnson. Love this question, Caitlin. And my advice, straight and simple, is when you reduce scope, reduce deliverables. And also find ways to make your timelines shorter. If you're getting pushback on branding packages that are in the like high four figures or even five figure price ranges, then you either need to adjust the positioning of your business to position yourself to be service, to serve clients that are at that higher level that are looking to invest those levels of money, or you need to like adjust your offer suite to serve the types of clients that your business is actually currently attracting. And so it sounds like you're asking, like, how do I craft offers for the types of clients that are just saying that those higher ticket prices are too high? So reduce scope. And when you reduce the investment, meaning when you reduce the scope, you reduce the investment, you also reduce the deliverables. So don't sell a full service brand identity package for a lower price just because someone can't afford to spend what your higher priced package is. And practice your skills to get faster, to shorten your timelines. That is going to allow you to do more volume at lower ticket prices. And when you're selling services at lower prices, you just need to do more of those types of projects over time to equal the same amount of money that you would if you were charging higher ticket. So in order to do that, you have to make sure that you're not booked up by a really low priced package. So that's what I'm saying when I say reduce scope, practice your skills, get faster. And then, you know, as you're doing more sales volume for those lower price, maybe productized style services, VIP days, intensives, things that have a shorter timeline and a low deliverable count, you need to make sure that you have an impactful marketing plan. I don't use the word consistent here because I think impact is much more valuable over time than you hitting a certain like cadence on your marketing. Yes, that is important. But I think like, to sell this, to gross the same amount of money that you would with a higher ticket offer, with a lower ticket offer, then you just need to do more volume and you need to be really actively engaging with people. You need to potentially launch your service just like you would a course or a program, and just make sure that you're putting yourself out there and that you're casting a wide enough net and enough people know about your service to where you're getting the sales that would, you know, add up to what you want to eventually make. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that was like a perfect answer. And I literally don't think I can even add to that because I think you just absolutely nailed it. So okay, yeah, I'm just going to move on to the next question.
Let's move on to the next question. We can both answer the next question.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, so the next question comes from Sarah J, which is, what is your favorite software you use day to day in your design business? For myself, I mean, we already talked about Notion, how much we are obsessed. I use Notion for everything, literally. The entire Adobe Creative Suite is always going to be top tier for designers. Jen and I communicate through Voxer a lot, but we also communicate through Slack. It just kind of depends. Like sometimes it's easier to explain something through a voice memo, or sometimes like one of us is driving in the car. So we just like hop
or
on
I'm at
Voxer
the playground.
Yeah. Jen's always at the playground. Or the beach. Yeah. So yeah, it's kind of nice to just hop on and have a quick like actual voice chat. But we also communicate through Loom with each other and our clients. So we have all of our SOPs recorded as Loom videos, but also I use Loom to send all of my clients their brand presentations. I actually never hop on one-on-one calls with clients anymore for like presenting work, because to me personally, I think it's just nicer for them to have the opportunity to like really think about what they're looking at before they have a chance to speak and like react. So I like to just send them a Loom. Also, I am obsessed with Flowdesk for emailing. I use Flowdesk for Jen's company as well. At Hello June, you have your newsletters through Flowdesk. I have my newsletters through Flowdesk. I also have like a little intro to my packaging design course, where in Flowdesk you can sign up and then you get like, it's kind of like an email funnel. So you'll get all the free lessons over the course of like a week, and it's all set up through Flowdesk. It's so easy. Like, oh my gosh, anything related to email, I used to really like cringe about. I always found software like MailChimp kind of confusing. And so Flowdesk just makes it so much easier for me. It is well worth the money. So yeah. What are some of your favorite softwares that you like to use?
Well, I put on here, yes, Canva, exclamation point, because I feel like there's this thing in the design industry and brand design where it's like, oh, like Canva is like not as good as Adobe, and like you're not a professional if you use Canva. But like, I'm working with multiple people in my MiniMind program who use Canva as their like primary design software, and they're very successful in selling, you know, very high ticket design services to their clients. So I use Canva all the time in my company, not necessarily for brand design, just because Canva doesn't have that pen tool that I like to use in Illustrator. But I use it for templates for my clients. I'm creating like modular website headers for one of my clients right now for her to be able to swap out season to season. She's a product-based business, and it just made the most sense for me to create that in Canva. I do like welcome guides, like digital welcome guides for clients in Canva. I just kind of go into their account and create it in their account, so that way they just have access to it. Super nice. A couple of other pieces of software that you guys might not be as aware of. I know I talk about Figma all the time, but I use it for beyond just website mockups. I use it for presentation decks. I use it for sitemaps, and I use it for social graphics. There's a lot more that you can do with Figma, with like UI UX and like interactive mockups and stuff like that. But I have just been really loving that, and all my clients give their feedback on the brand presentations within Figma as well. Gusto is my payroll software. If any of you guys are an LLC, or you're, you know, working with subcontractors and you're starting to have to figure out all the tax and compliance stuff, Gusto is my saving grace. It sends me automated reminders. Hey, just a reminder, you need to file this type of paperwork by this date, or, you know, we've done this on your behalf. And it's just like, it's like a low monthly fee. I think $30 a month. You pay a little bit more if you're doing multiple different payrolls. It's helped me with getting my workers' comp insurance set up after bringing Lauren on as a part-time employee, helping kind of figure out the intricacies of having an employee based in another state where, like, then what my business is based in, and seeing what type of compliance Wisconsin has versus Florida. And then just a ton of tax stuff related to subcontractors. It helps me send out my 1099s like automatically. You can have it mail it for you. Like, it is just like, it's my whole finance department, and I would be lost without them. Another thing that I have recently signed up for is the Monotype subscription. I think it's like $130 a year, and that's definitely less than what I spend on Monotype fonts yearly in my company. Monotype is probably, or myfonts.com, owned by Monotype, is probably my primary place that I go to get different typefaces for clients. And they got me with an ad, and I tried it out. I really like their desktop app as well. And they have a cool way to like organize all of your fonts, great filters and tagging. You're able to search by like whether a font library is variable, or it has ligatures, or like different spacing. And it's, I highly recommend it if anyone is, you know, lost in the sauce when it comes to fonts.
I think I need this. That sounds amazing.
You should get it, because I mean, like, I spend like maybe $50 to $100 per project on desktop and web fonts. So if it's $130 a year, you can activate them on your computer just like you would with Adobe fonts. But you can also download the font files, which Adobe does not allow you to do. So you can download like WOFF font files for use in desktop and everything. And so you just have to make sure that your client is aware of the limits of the specific web font license when you offboard them. Typically, it's 10,000 page views monthly. And I just let clients know that and I put it in my contract as well. Audacity is something that Lauren actually turned me on to. It's just a recording program and we're in Zencastr right now, but Zencastr is just not as good as Audacity. Audacity is simple, straightforward, and allows me to have a lot of control over the way that I record my audio. I use Novo.
And it's free.
And it's free, which is like crazy. I use Novo for my banking and I've heard mixed reviews about Novo. Not going to lie. Some people just have a really difficult time with their customer service, but I've never had an issue and I really like their reserves function. It allows me to do the profit first method really well. And then the last thing is GSAP. This stands for GreenStock Animation Platform, and it is a scroll and timeline based animation library of JavaScript code. And I don't personally use this, but my developers will use this. And it's something that you can integrate with Webflow really easily. It can integrate with Shopify. And it's just, it's responsible for those buttery scroll and like gorgeous scroll based timeline effects that you see on like all of the award winning websites. So that's something that I've been getting a little bit more into. Basically, telling Jen, hey, like I want Jen being my Shopify developer from Genuine Creative, shout out. I feel like I mentioned her like at least once an episode. I'm like, oh, I want to do this type of animation. She's like, that's GSAP. Let's do it. So that's been, it's like, I guess it's software that I'm not necessarily using, but something that is fun to be aware of. There's so much you can do with GSAP. It's like, if I had the time and the like desire to learn JavaScript, I would start there for sure.
Yeah, having a developer that knows that kind of stuff on hand is so incredibly useful. Okay, so the next question comes from Jamie McDonough Chodoroff, and it is, how do you handle clients that want something super custom or hand-drawn when you're not an illustrator? I completely relate to this, Jamie, because I have never considered myself to be like a fine artist or an illustrator. And I know they go hand in hand with graphic design, but I'm just not a great illustrator. I'm going to be honest about that. And so anytime that I've had a client that is really interested in something very hand-drawn, I will hire out for that. And that is one of the greatest benefits of Facebook groups, like the Better Podcast Facebook group. If you're not in there, you gotta get in there right now, because you can just reach out to the group and say, hey, is there any illustrators that would be interested in this type of work? And maybe show some examples of the type of illustration that you're looking for. And I guarantee that there's going to be at least a couple people that will respond and say, hey, yeah, that's me. And it's just so nice to have that taken off your plate. So I'll just make sure that I budget accordingly so that I can pay an illustrator, because I would much rather have them do that than have me struggle through it and just not end up with the result that I want. So yeah, that's what I would recommend for that.
Yeah, couldn't have said it better myself. Joy Warren asks, what definition would you give brand design when explaining to someone who doesn't know anything about it? Hi Joy. Love this question. And I turned to one of my favorite brand design books for the answer to this question, The Brand Gap by Marty Neumeier. And I want to read two different definitions to you guys. One of them that like I kind of agree with and one of them that I really agree with. So Marty's definition of brand designer is any person who helps shape a brand, including graphic designers, strategists, marketing directors, researchers, advertising planners, web developers, PR specialists, copywriters, and others. So to me, this feels like too wide of a definition, because I feel like brand designer to me means someone who's actually designing the visual identity. And so I wanted to also give you guys Marty's definition of visual identity or brand identity. This feels better to me when explaining to someone what it is that I do, because it's kind of hard to explain, like, I'm a brand identity designer. It's like, what does that mean? His definition of brand identity is the outward expression of a brand, including its name, trademark, communications, and visual appearance. So the key word there being visual appearance. as brand identity designers, we were actually only working on such a small part of what the entirety of the brand looks like. So I guess, you know, his definition of brand design, I mean, he defines design well beyond graphic design, you know, like it could be product design, it could be system design, it could be user experience design, which goes further than even the website world, into like product design and even like building design and architecture. Everything is user experience. So that might not be the simplest answer, but I feel like you can draw like a good understanding and maybe craft your own definition for what it means for you and your company. Typically when people are like, oh, what do? I say, I'm a brand and web designer. So I help small businesses create logos, color palettes, and websites. I feel like for the most part, that's pretty straightforward. And people are always like, oh, wow, that's so cool. Instead of like, oh, I didn't know that was a thing. Most of the time people are like, color palettes, like they just get really excited about that. So what do you say when people ask you what you do?
Yeah, I guess I would probably say something similar to you. Like, I would say that a brand design includes logos, fonts, colors, typography, but also just is like the visual direction. Like, I like to include strategy in there because I always include some kind of strategy with brand identity work. So it's like the strategic creative direction of the visuals for the brand. So like, how are you going to visually come across? And like, the brand identity should be able to dictate what your website styling looks like and what your social media like templates look like. You should be able to get some of that from the brand identity. So it should be something that a client can take and do with what they want and like be able to have a really cohesive visual look for their brand. So it's kind of hard to explain in like a couple of words, but yeah, something along those lines.
Love that.
The next question comes from Kylie Compton, who asks, how do you manage pricing when it comes to friends and family? What I would say is that it kind of depends on how you price your services to begin with. I know some designers are very strong into value-based pricing. Some are more package-based pricing where they have like a set flat rate, and some people kind of do it in between. If I had to price something out for a friend or a family member, I would probably base it off of my normal pricing while giving them a slight discount, but not telling them that I'm giving them a discount. I think there's something psychological that happens when you tell someone that you're giving them a discount that makes them take it less seriously. Not sure what it is, but I swear this is true. Like, anytime when I started my business, when a client would say like, actually, like that's kind of, you know, above my budget, like what can we do? And like, before I knew the principles of pricing, I would say, you know what, I'll just like give you a 10% discount. I feel like people would take that and, you know, they'd be really happy with having a discount, but then they just don't have as much stakes in like the project, and they don't see the value the same way that you do. If they're going to be asking for discounts, they clearly don't really see the value there. And I think if it's a friend or a family member, I would hope that they wouldn't straight up ask you for a discount right off the bat. If they do, I would maybe be hesitant to work with them unless, you know, it's a project that you think would be really beneficial to you, or it's a family member that like means so much to you and you just can't possibly imagine saying no. But yeah, I would probably give them a little bit of a discount and then just like tell them, yeah, this is like the pricing that I can offer you. Let me know if this would work. And if they say, no, I was really hoping you would do it for free, I would either say no straight up, or I've also done trades of services. So I haven't had this happen within like a family member situation, but I have done this with a friend who is a brand photographer. We did a trade of services. I did her branding. She did my brand photography. So there's always that option too, if your friend or family member just isn't really like in a place where they can pay for the services. So yeah, what would you do in this situation?
I have a free or full price policy when it comes to friends or family. And I don't take on like fully blown free projects. So like even just yesterday, I had like one of Dylan's friends from back in Texas is launching a new brand and he already had a logo, but he needed it like digitized because he needed like vector. And I was like, oh, that'll take me 20 minutes. Let me just sit down and knock it out for him. He didn't even ask me, but I was like, he was like, man, I'm going to have to like figure out how to like digitize. He was texting Dylan. He wasn't even talking to me. And I was like, it would take me 20 minutes of my time to do this and save him hours. Like, I'm just going to go ahead and do it. And I like emailed him. He's like, wow, Jen, you didn't do this. Like, thank you so much. It's just like, those are the types of like free projects that I like do just out of the kindness of my heart. But like, if it's like someone needs a brand, it's like, I'm going to have to refer you to someone that I know that can do this at the price point that you want it to be done at. That I'm just in a busy season of my life right now and business and everything. But I have worked with friends who have paid me my full rate, over 10K even. And it's worked out fantastically. I think it's about the way that they approach you. Because if someone is like wanting free work, then it just makes me like resistant to it. But if someone is like just talking to me about their problem, then it makes me want to like volunteer the work to them for free. But that like free or full price policy has served me very well in business. Yeah. I think it would be different if I was like, I don't know, maybe starting towards the beginning of my career, or if I was in a season where I was like, oh, I really want to take on this project and I was excited about it or whatever, you know, never say never, but that's kind of my approach.
Yeah, I agree with that completely.
Rachel Buckley asks, what is your favorite and least favorite thing about running a design business? I'll go first and then you can go. My favorite overall is the time and financial freedom that it gives my family. But in terms of day-to-day tasks, probably like designing the primary logo and the logo mark is just like my favorite task in and of itself. Lauren, you know this. Least favorite is dealing with really difficult clients. A close second least favorite is having to deal, like go through slow seasons in business, which are just, they mess with your head. How about you?
Yeah, I would say my favorite is that I love not feeling constrained to what society's version of a job looks like. When I was working an 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. office job, I felt like my mental health really was suffering. I felt like I just didn't have the freedom to do anything in my life. I didn't have the time. I didn't have the energy. So just having that flexibility and time freedom is amazing. And then also with like projects, I would say my favorite is when I do a combination of branding with packaging design. I love seeing like a brand turn into a physical form and being able to hold it and like open it and touch it. It's just, I love packaging. So yeah, those are my favorite kind of projects. And then I would say my least favorite thing about my design studio is just having a lack of consistency. It's gotten better over time, but you know, you're always going to go through slow and busy seasons. And then sometimes you're making like a lot of money in 1 month. And sometimes you're literally making no money at all.
Or losing money. Kind of, I've been there.
Or losing money. I've been there too.
Yeah.
Sometimes the expenses can get outrageous. I think, you know, I've found ways to balance it over time and to find consistency, but I've had years, like literally years, where my income has been fluctuating so violently that it just drives me insane. So
probably drives your tax accountant insane too. I remember in those early years, my tax accountant was like, what's your estimated income for next year? And I'm like, I don't know. Like, she's like, it's going to be more or less than this year. I was like, honestly, could not tell you. Like,
yeah. It takes a couple of years, I would say, for you to get to a point where you can even estimate things like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. 100%.
The next question comes from Lee Ching, who asks, do you utilize AI for idea generating? For myself, I have dabbled in ChatGPT. I do blog post writing for Hello June, actually. And so what I do with ChatGPT there is that I ask for an outline of a blog post. So basically I'll just kind of input like what the blog post title should be and like some points that I want to touch on. And then I will ask it to write a blog post for me. And usually it gives me like some some thoughts that maybe I haven't thought about, or just kind of a more general, broader outline of like how I can break apart my points into paragraphs. And then I'll just go back and rewrite it with my own voice and just adding in more specific information that only I would know. And it's not something that like an AI bot can generate. So it's so helpful for writing content. Like I know people that use it for social content all the time, but I've never used it for art related content. Like I haven't used it for branding or web design. I'm not even sure if that's a thing, but I'm sure it probably is. So
yeah, I saw a reel the other day that was like this person using AI to like create like a branding project, and they were like, yeah, I'm gonna sell this for thousands of dollars, and like all the comments were like, dude, I don't know if that's like ethical. Like I feel like there's this like ethics question, you know, when it comes to AI, but I do the same thing that you were talking about.
Yeah, I haven't dabbled with it yet because I think it's so new, like weeks old, but Photoshop has a new AI filter, or it's not a filter, but it's like you can select a certain area on your photo and type in something, like add in like an iPad with like a screen on it that shows this, and like it'll just generate that for you. And what? I've seen people use it for mock-ups. Like you can make mock-ups. So I'm going to have to dabble in that. But I have heard that there's some kind of legal issues with that where it's like you don't technically have the rights to the imagery that it's generating. So you could use it for like mock-ups or like to show off your work, but you probably could not use that for like a client project or like packaging design, for example. Like I couldn't just generate like a design and then like put it on a package and sell it. I don't think that's legal technically, but I'm not sure. It sounds interesting though.
It's an interesting like new frontier. I feel like I've used ChatGPT for color names, which sometimes I struggle with. It's way better than Google at just coming up with really unique and like juicy color names. And then also sometimes for copywriting, like I don't necessarily like say like write me a homepage like copy for an interior designer, but I'll say give me some words and phrases that relate to an interior designer that has a classic timeless style, and it will give me just like words and phrases that I wouldn't necessarily have used otherwise, kind of like a thesaurus a little bit, or like what's another way to say clean and classic, because I feel like I say that all the time. And so I feel like I kind of use it as like a search engine a little bit. But I'm very conscious, especially when I'm using it for like copy or like a service that I'm providing to a client, that like I'm not copying anything that it has written, because I think, like you said, there are some legal ramifications there. And with AI generated content, I know that it's not unique. And I know that what I come up with in my mind, like, yeah, maybe someone else might have come up with it, but I know that that is something that I am generating myself. And so I kind of try to, you know, I try to like, I don't walk the line, but I try to be very like conscious of like what I'm using it for. If it's in the research phase or a thesaurus or color list, then like I'm cool with it. But, you know, I think people can abuse it and it might come back to bite them in the butt in the future if they're using it in a way that goes against what, you know, the rules are about IP and selling other people's IP to clients. So our last question from Mars Caruso actually kind of ties in with this. Mars asks, how do you know if your original idea is actually original and not being used somewhere else? The answer, my dear friend, is that you do not. If anyone else has a different answer than that, then like, please let me know. But you know, I've had this actually happen to me when I designed a brand identity for a past client. They were in a completely different industry, but they found two logos that were in different industry. I think it was like a hotel or something that looked pretty similar to like what I had come up with. And granted, I had designed a very like geometric, simple design that was kind of like a monogram. So like someone else had thought of the same idea. I had never seen those logos before. And I consulted with my IP attorney, and she said, like, you can decide to change the logo for them if they're really concerned. But in the IP world, I believe that you can only trademark a logo within a specific industry. So as long as it's not in the same industry, then, like, there shouldn't be any type of legal ramifications. Associations with the brands, like, that might be something to consider for your client. Like, do you want your brand to be like, oh, that logo looks like that other logo? Like, what are their values? Like, I mean, that's something that's a little bit more nuanced. But I mean, I think the best thing that you can do is do just good competitor research. I always ask my clients to provide me the competitors, like, in their local area, specifically if, especially if they're a physical business that has like a sign or something. And I look and see what their branding looks like, to ensure that I don't accidentally create something that's within their industry and within their geographic area. Beyond that, like, I don't know, I feel like people have said there's no such thing as an original idea. Like, of course, I'm sitting here talking about like how I come up with all these original copy ideas. It's way better than AI, but like, I'm sure that there's like copy pieces that I've inadvertently like have created the same thing as someone else. Like, there's so much saturation in like the copy world, and I tend to work on similar types of clients. So I think that the best that you can do is just understand the competitive landscape and the other visuals of your client's competitors, and, you know, do your research, but like, don't spend hours on it because you just drive yourself insane. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree with that. Something that I had to do when I was teaching, last semester I taught an intro to design class. So it's people who were really just dabbling in graphic design for the first time in college. So we had a project where they had to design a t-shirt for a nonprofit organization. They got to pick whatever the organization was, and they could design a shirt based off of like their mission and their values. And so one of the things that we had them do is, after they had already sketched out a couple of solid ideas, is to, like, there was this one website, I can't remember the name of it now, but there's a website that has nonprofit t-shirt designs. And so we had them search keywords that were associated with their nonprofit on that website and print out a bunch of like what other people are designing, and then cross-check it with what they've created and see if their artwork is original enough. And like, I'm not expecting them to have copied anyone, but I guess the idea behind that was to see, like, does my artwork just look like everything else? Like, if I have to design something for a nature preserve, does my nature preserve design look like every other nature preserve design out there? Like, if it does, how can we start to move away from that and develop something that feels more unique and more specific to this nonprofit? So it just kind of gave them some insight into like what exists out there. So yeah, with branding design and web design and stuff, I would probably just search some keywords, maybe on Pinterest or Google, and just see what's out there. Maybe do this after you design so that you're not subconsciously influencing yourself. But just see like what's out there, how similar it is to the work that you've already produced. And if you're noticing there's some really strong parallels of like, oh, like all these brands are using almost the exact same typeface that I'm using, maybe you could think about like switching it up a little bit. But yeah, it's tricky. You're never going to know for sure.
I love that exercise. That's so cool. I want to take your class. The class that I wish that I had been able to take in college that was not offered at my college. Love it. Well, thank you guys for listening to all of these questions and for submitting them. If any of you guys have additional answers that you'd like to provide, or thoughts on what you heard today, or sub questions that came out of something that Lauren and I talked about today, please do not hesitate to reach out to us. Lauren, do you want to share with everyone how they can contact you and find you? I know you've been on before, but in case someone is completely new and has never heard of you before.
Yeah, so you can find me on Instagram at LB Creative. It's ELBY Creative. That's also my website as well. And I have a packaging design class. So you can find that at packagingdesignmaster.com. Yeah, I'll be hanging out on Instagram and I hope to see you guys there.
Awesome. Well, that wraps season 7. I cannot believe it. Next couple of episodes are going to be good ones. They're going to be our From the Archives episodes. I'm going to pull 4 of my favorite episodes over the past 7 seasons, do a little intro to each one, and those are going to play for the next 4 weeks. And then we're going to be back in August with season 8, episode 1. And I am already so, so, so pumped for all the guests and the topics for season 8. Also, I have a survey for podcast listeners that I would love for you guys to take for me. It's always nice to hear what you guys are wanting, and I have amazing conversation, individual conversations with listeners every single week that DM me, but I thought it would be nice to just kind of pull a more like holistic sampling of the podcast audience to see like what type of topics you guys are interested in, the way that you interact with our content. There's also a free Notion template that you get after you fill out the survey of the way that I map out my offer suite internally with Hello June. It's a little blank template, but I kind of guide you through with the like column titles and the like sample information in there. If you guys are curious about the way that like I kind of map out my offer suite, and this is actually information that I provide within my signature program, the Design Mini Mind. So if you're curious about what that template looks like, go ahead and fill out the survey and we'll send you the Notion template that you can duplicate and fill out on your own for your own company. Awesome. Well, goodbye for now. And I'll see you guys in the From the Archives episodes, but also see you in season 8.
Bye guys.
We hope you enjoyed today's conversation. Subscribe wherever you're listening to make sure you don't miss an episode. And we'd be forever grateful if you left us a review on Apple Podcasts. We bet you've got designer friends who'd enjoy it too, so share it with them.
If you'd like to submit an inbox question for us to answer on air, or you want to get in contact with us directly, email us at inbox@betterbranddesigner.com.
Our Facebook community is one of the most positive, supportive, and fun groups we've ever been a part of. We'd love for you to join us. Search for Better the Brand Designer Podcast on Facebook.
If you love these conversations between designer friends and would like to support us, you can find us on Patreon at patreon.com/betterpodcast.
And visit us online at betterbranddesigner.com to learn more about our podcast and snag major discounts on our favorite resources.
Special thanks to our producer, John, from Wayfair Recording Co. See you guys again next week.